Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Condensed Histories, the podcast that takes pop culture and reveals the real history underneath. I'm your host, Jem Deduccio, and what we're doing this time round is Dune 2, which, if you join me on a podcast in the back. I did a whole episode on Dune when it first came out, well, Dune Part 1. And therefore, we're going to be talking about the movie, which, bottom line, is amazing, as you know by now. Or, hey, if it's the first time you've heard one of these episodes, hi, welcome, join the party. I'm not here to specifically review movies and give them a 5-star or whatever. What I tend to do is talk about whether I like them or not, and indeed, as usual, be able to glean any real history. Now, because I've already touched on this topic, and this is part two, in terms of the history stuff, I don't have much more to add to it. So, first things first, yeah, it's a masterpiece. And I heard a number of people say after the first one going, this is an amazing film. This is an example of world building not seen since the Lord of the Rings movies, which I think is completely valid.
Rolling over the sands, you can see spice in the air.
But then people added, quite rightly, but does he stick the landing? Everybody thought he would, but the difference between, if you like for a moment, between the Lord of the Rings movies and the Dune films is that with the Lord of the Rings, Peter Jackson filmed them all back to back. It was insane from New Line. They gave him $300 million, which would have made it the most expensive movie of all time at that point, but the idea was he was going to come back with three films. And it turned out it was extraordinarily good planning on the parts of New Line, because the theatrical release grossed nearly $3 billion, so nearly 10 times the initial outlay. And also, on top of that, it won a slew of Oscars. The third movie wins loads and loads of Oscars, 11 Oscars in total, which matches it up there with the likes of Titanic and Ben-Hur. And also, there's home video releases, there's all the merch as well, then there's the famous extended editions, which still sell.
Those were the stories that stayed with you, that meant something, even if you were too small to understand why.
So yeah, license to print money, quite frankly, but he was in control of all of it, whereas, understandably, this time round, the world has changed in the interceding 15 years, particularly the movie business, and so they wanted to wait and see if the first Dune would do well. The other thing worth reminding everybody is that this is not the first cinematic outing of Dune. Indeed, Dune has appeared in multiple different formats, and not always for the better. For starters, the movie in the 1980s, directed by David Lynch, and hot off the likes of Eraserhead. Incredibly interesting director. Don't necessarily like everything of his, but it's hard to think that somebody who directed Blue Velvet, they would be sitting there thinking, yeah, this is the sort of guy we want to be doing a largely children aimed at sci-fi movie. He'd never done anything like that before. Apparently he was in the running for Return of the Jedi. So that would have been quite different if it had been a Lynchian film. Anyway, that didn't work very well. It was a colossal financial failure. Dune itself has been then turned into several different TV movies or miniseries, however you want to call it, which have been available on DVD. They've been on the Sci-Fi Channel. they were all right. It's severely limited by budget. The fact is that the sheer scale of Dune is hard to do right on TV unless you're going to give somebody a lot of money. And back to Villeneuve's vision generally in Dune, the first film, if I have one criticism of it, and I've heard a few people say this, the action is rather lifeless. It doesn't have the visceral excitedness of, let's take for example the famous truck scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's not a particularly expensive scene. It took lots of planning and some amazing stunt work, choreography, and obviously direction as well. And it's just a masterclass, and you're on the edge of your seat as Indy's being dragged behind the truck, and you should know what this scene is by now. There is, no matter how many things explode, no matter the huge scale, no matter what's at stake, nothing is like that in the first Dune movie, even compared to a Marvel Cinematic Universe film. The point of the film is not action. But when you do have things like Paul fighting one-on-one to the death, when you do have the sandworms attacking the spice carrier, when you do have the Harkonnens attacking the base, there are some amazing set pieces in it, but they never have any visceral weight to them. They are visually stunning. You can admire them. If there is a flaw, that's the flaw. And you know what? Unsurprisingly, same director, same kind of cast, same cinematography, same thing in the second one as well. But that's not to underplay it. It is an exciting movie, and the world building and the believability of these places, even though it's all filmed on planet Earth and some of it's filmed, in inverted commas, in a computer, it just looks like other worlds. And while I did say about, you know, filmed on actual planet Earth and computers, the reality is, and this is the thing I found so striking, when we had Austin Butler, at that time we'd only known him from Elvis. Since then, he's also been in Masters of the Air, and he's got this big floppy hair, and he's well known for his hair, and here he is, completely shaved, bald, and in this really strange black and white footage. It turns out all of that Harkonnen stuff was filmed in infrared, which gives it an image, a sense that's just never been seen in any film ever before. I'm not saying it's the first time anything's ever been filmed in infrared, but again, it shows Denis Villeneuve's vision. He just wants to show you and wow you and give you spectacle that you haven't seen since the times of Lord of the Rings, Star Wars movies, or Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And it's been a very long time with all the clever technology that's out there. It's been a very long time since we've had such a visual feast, even improving on the likes of Avatar. Indeed, unlike Avatar, this actually has something to say, and it's better acted, and it's just got more going on in it. So I think you can tell I'm a huge fan. And what's remarkable about this is the advantage of the miniseries, the cheap miniseries that I mentioned, they have had the advantage of time. The original Book of Dune is dense. There's a lot going on in it. And indeed, I believe David Lynch's original cut of his movie was something like 4.5 hours. He knew it couldn't be that long, but he was trying to get as much of the story into the film there. In the case of the miniseries, they could spend more time to allow everything to grow and generate. But if you've got two films, where each film is 2.5, 3 hours, something like that, that's a miniseries length. You're talking about 5+ hours worth of time. That's enough to be able to get Dune. Maybe not every single scene, but the book is done right. And once again, you have this amazing casting crew. I mentioned Austin Butler, but Dave Bautista, he's great in both of them. It all hangs on the shoulders of Timothy Chalamet as Paul Atreides, and he's remarkable. And Zendaya, she got hardly a look in the first movie, but we'd already seen how great she's been in things like the Spider-Man movies, and here she continues, and she grows the character, and she grows, I'm going to argue, some of her acting abilities as well. It's, if you put the two films together, going back to some of the critics talking about, you know, does he stick the landing? Yes, he does. It will not surprise me if to try and get a bit more money, because the thing about the first Dune is it barely made money. It was a big roll of the dice to do the second movie, and let's hope that it does blow the doors off this time round. I do feel that Everybody's hungry for some movies. I have been watching a lot of films at home because there's nothing out that makes me want to go to the movies. I have been to see, I'm trying to think about it, Zone of Interest is probably the only film I have gone to the cinema for in 2024. That is depressing. There was a time in my life, I think I mentioned this before, that I used to go every single week when I was at university. And so with Dune 2, there's just an appetite and hunger. There hasn't been a sci-fi epic of this scale since arguably The Creator in 2023, but people didn't go and see that. Well, shame on them coming up with something interesting and original and eye-catching. Great film, by the way. It's available to watch on Disney Plus if you're interested. But since the last big sci-fi hit of this ilk is arguably Avatar 2. I don't think it's going to make over 2 billion like Avatar 2. It deserves to. But it wouldn't surprise me if there's also a release of 1 and 2 together with breaks. And I would go and see that. I think that would be an amazing evening out or a whole great Saturday afternoon. And when you see it condensed into, or not condensed, but put into one big cinematic epic, this has classic written all over it. And I'm going to keep gushing, basically, about how wonderful it is. Now, if this does well, Villeneuve has said he would love to adapt some of the other books, most notably Dune Messiah. There are loads of Frank Herbert's books, and indeed, after he passed away, other people have had a crack in this world. A little bit, again, going back to the world of Tolkien, Tolkien actually only wrote, as books, The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, and it was Christopher Tolkien who compiled his voluminous amounts of notes into the Silmarillion. It was never meant to be a book, but it was giving you all the background as to why the Third Age of Middle-earth was the way it was in Lord of the Rings, and that sold really well. To be honest, it's not very easy read. It reads more like the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle than an actual narrative or book, and so on and so forth. The Children of Húrin, and so we are now used to other Tolkiens working on the estate and coming up with interesting stuff, at least. So even though the man himself has passed away 50 years ago, there is still fresh looks at Middle Earth. And it's the same thing with the Dune universe. And why not? But there are already still some Frank Herbert books. Now, I have to be honest, I've only read the first one. I have heard that some of the other books get super weird, like Paul's son, because I think this is in Dune Emperor. He becomes the Emperor, Paul's son. And then he turns into a sandworm. I mean, if I'm wrong, I apologize, but somebody, some human turns into a sandworm. That's weird. That would be hard to film. But of course, again, going back to Lord of the Rings films, not everything, although you can tell Peter Jackson absolutely loves these books, the source material, he does tinker around with it. Now, a lot of people think he went too far with the Hobbit movies. Let's just put that to one side for a moment. But even when you look at Lord of the Rings, the trilogy is held up as one of the greatest trilogies of all time. It's held up as one of the greatest film adaptations of a book of all time. It's also held up in terms of world building and yada, yada, yada. It's just so many things it is, and they deserve all the plaudits. But here's the thing. The hobbits did not just get their weapons from Aragorn, throwing them at them on Weathertop Mountain. They went to Bree, and there were the Barrow Downs, and that entire bit dealing with undead spirits in the barrows, that was cut out. Tom Bombadil, who is insufferable in the books, he was cut out, quite rightly. The Shelob stuff actually doesn't happen in the third book, it happens in the second book, but to stretch out the pacing better, it's put into the third movie, so you've actually got Frodo with something to do in the third movie, rather than just walk up to Mount Doom. And that's pretty much all he has to do in the third book. That gets moved around. So why wouldn't Denis Villeneuve, who clearly loves this world, why not let him monkey around with this stuff, particularly the harder-to-grasp surrealist stuff? So we have another cinematic classic. And I'm careful with my wording there, because some people turn around and go, oh, well, what about this? That was brilliant. And what about... Yeah, but a lot of these films are... Let's take, for example, Nomadland, which won a bunch of Oscars and is important for so many different reasons of diversity and recognition, all these things, tick, 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 tick. Fundamentally, it's about a middle-aged to late-aged woman driving around in a truck. And there is a scene where she, out of necessity, she lives in a truck. So at some point, she's going to have to go to the bathroom in a bucket in the truck. This is not something that the whole world is clamoring to see. It's a very measured film. It's a very well acted and directed film. But it was never designed to be cinematic gold. It was designed to be respected and have lots of critics stroking their chins and going, oh, yes, we approve. And in that regard, mission accomplished. Same thing with Coda. Now, it did end up winning Best Picture. The first streamer to win one of those was Apple Plus TV. Well done, you guys. But again, Coda or Moonlight, all of these are great films, but they're not something that's going to excite the whole world. That's more like Barbie. And in this case, we've got Dune as well. It's something that the whole world can enjoy and take something from. And I have no doubt that in 20 years' time, there'll be the 20th anniversary Blu-ray release or Ultra HD streaming release with extra bits, with the scenes that didn't make it or whatever. And quite right too. These films take on a life of their own. What amused me and some of the other people is going back to Warhammer, which, you know, I do periodically. There were some Warhammer followers, or fans, I should say, who saw the first Dune and went, oh my goodness, look how much they've been ripping off Warhammer. And some of us older people were in the hobby were going, guys, wait, whoa, 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 whoa. Dune was written 20 years before Warhammer 40,000 even came out. Could it not be that Warhammer was influenced by Dune rather than the other way around? Also, it looks completely different. So if you're getting Warhammer fans excited about it, or at least grumpy about it, if you've got the average Joe public, if you've got the fans of the books, if you've got fans of sci-fi, this is something which sort of crosses generations and different genres. Is it a four quadrant movie? Probably. And it helps that someone like Timothy Chalamet and Zendaya, again, they appeal to the millennials or Generation Z. They see themselves with these people and will therefore want to see what exciting adventures these chisel-jawed god and goddesses of awesomeness look like. I'm just deeply jealous of both of them because they're just so talented and young. And in the case of Timothy Chalamet, he has wonderfully tousled hair, says the balding guy. Please go and see it. If you're complaining, well, there's nothing good in the cinema, it's all a bit art house at the moment, well, this is your chance to prove that wrong. The studios are, if nothing, dull and predictable. And if this makes a bunch of money, it means more epic sci-fi will get made. If nobody goes to see this film, well, guess what's going to happen? We're going to get more low-budget indie films and horrors because they're safe bets, and then the other stuff will be boring and unimaginative, and it's Fast and Furious 15. So support your local Dune 2 outlet, wherever that may be. Now, let's get into some of the history. I've talked certainly about some of the pop culture elements of the history, and I will have to, because I didn't do this last time. I'll definitely have to tell you the weirdest one, which is when we have to go, of course, back to South Park. I'm going down south, I'm gonna have myself time. There is a concept about your internal microbiology and your biome that you create inside us. There is a wonderful fact that if you add up the entirety of the cells inside you and on you, there are more than 50% of them aren't you.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So they're not your skin cells, they're not your bone cells, etc. They are cells of bacteria that live on you. And indeed, without friendly bacteria in us, we would barely be able to live. We need bacteria in our guts to help digest and in our stomachs as well. Now, obviously, there can be bad bacteria, which leads to horrific infections and so on and so forth. And what I found interesting is in the time since I last had to do anything like this, I had an infection earlier this year. And the doctor gave me some antibiotics. But for the first time ever, she said to me, or any doctor has said to me, once you finish the antibiotics, I really do recommend you buy some probiotic yogurts or drinks because you need to allow your natural bacteria to regrow again. Now, in the past, whenever I've taken antibiotics, it's like, just like, wipe them out. But now there's a recognition that you are also, by its nature, wiping out some of the good stuff too, and you need to get some of the good stuff back again. This has led to, in America, because only in America, this has led to the idea of stool sampling. And if somebody has a particularly healthy gut with healthy bacteria, you can take a piece of one of their stools and implant it inside the gut of somebody else. And this has been proven in small research samples. Please do not take medical advice from Jem Deduccio, who has written history books and does not have a PhD in either biology or medicine, okay? And indeed, Teresa, if you hear this one, I'd love to get your thoughts on this and how badly I got it wrong, or whether I've got a point here and I've read it right. But yes, yeah, so some people donate, if you like, some of their good bacteria to other people, and it has improved their health. It has improved things like Crohn's disease, for example. Now, nobody's quite sure how or why. Well, they're assuming it's because of the change of the biome and the different bacteria. But if it can give anybody any kind of intestinal relief or reduce anybody's discomfort or pain in life, why not? If it works, yeah, let's do it. Now, if there are serious complications with this stuff, then we need to look into those, and is the cure worse than the disease? That doesn't seem to be the case. But in South Park, this was taken to its natural, bad taste solution, where one of these women took one of these stool swap sample things, and they started referring to it as the spice melange. And if you don't know about June, the whole key thing about arrakis, is it has this spice on it, which is so important. I'll come back to that in a minute. And so you do get these women talking wistfully about the spice melange.
The spice. He knows about the spice.
And it turned into a meme, and it's a fun episode. But yes, June, of course, is going to appear in something like South Park. There are references to it in Rick and Morty as well. It's the sort of thing where those things have been riffing off pop culture and sci-fi for so many years that when you get one of the granddaddies of the genres appearing, like Lord of the Rings or Dungeons and Dragons, etc., of course, they're going to... They show a lot of love to those sorts of things and have real fun with them. It's worth pointing out just briefly that there's an episode where two of the boys want to play... They literally call it Warhammer 40K. And the dad, he goes, hey, Dad, can we spend the whole weekend doing Warhammer 40K? He goes, yeah, let's do Warhammer 40K, thinking it's a drug and it isn't. And then, to the credit of the animators and writers. They literally have the right army on the board and the rules they are discussing at the time. I believe they are 8th edition rules, and they are the right 8th edition rules for the units that are being portrayed in the animation.
Okay, that has a toughness of 7 and a -1 to your hit rolls.
There is no need to go to that level of detail, but they did. So yeah, that shows you the love that's going on with these things. Let's move on from that, and instead let's talk about ornithopters. Now, ornithopters are something that have been around since about the 1930s. They've been mentioned in other things as well, and one of the brilliant design choices of the movies is, rather than giving them helicopters or jets or something like that, they give them ornithopters. And these things that kind of look like helicopters look more like dragonflies, because rather than having two rotating blades spinning round above them like a helicopter, these have four vibrating wings which work kind of like a dragonfly. And therefore, it's something that we can recognize what it is. It's a vertical takeoff craft. It's clearly military classified. There are obviously different sizes of them, or appears to be as well. It's something that we recognize what it's used for. And this is, again, one of the signs of the genius of the movies, is we get what they're doing, but visually it looks like nothing you've ever seen before. And, you know, 10 out of 10 for that. Quite famously, this was done also in the David Lynch movie back in the 80s. And this is key to the books, is there aren't a lot of missile weapons. People aren't armed with guns everywhere because you've got these shields. And what's interesting about these personal shields is they stop anything fast moving. They're kinetic shields. The faster moving the thing, the more likely it will stop it, i.e. bullets. But blades, fine, they go straight through the shield. So it leads to people doing almost medieval style combat. It's a genius idea. It's an ingenious way to explain why people aren't using guns all the time. Frank Herbert was brilliant with it. There was a really good visual interpretation of it with David Lynch as well. So, you know, I'll give him credit where credit's due there. And again, with the Denis Villeneuve version, what you get is these slight vibrations. Kind of looks like people go out of focus for a second, and then it calms down. So again, you now know through the visual cue, their shield is up, but then they can save money because it's just Josh Brolin wandering around. It's like, yeah, okay, he's got his shield up, but at the moment it's not being used. And so this sort of visual imagery in ornithopters is something that's not unique to Frank Herbert. Like I say, they've been around for quite some time. And this idea of fixed-wing aircraft, science fiction writers worked out early on, it's like, okay, those are a thing, but that's not how almost any animal actually flies. Look at birds or insects, etc. They're not fixed wing, they flap them. So surely there's a machine that could do that. And so the idea of the ornithopter's been around, predates Dune, but is so beautifully realized in Dune. It's just absolutely, anyway, I think I could go on and on for hours about this, but you don't want me to. I'm going to move on and tell you some of the actual history behind it. Now, as I said last time, when you have this desert that's covered in this incredibly important spice, in the movie, the reason why you need the spice is navigators use it to go into a trance, which allows them to, in essence, go through hyperspace and appear somewhere else. So that gives you, that's so important. And also, they are a hallucinogen for other people. So they are almost like a drug, but they're also vitally important for transport. A bit like something like petroleum. So imagine a world without petroleum. Now, we're trying to go in that direction at the moment. Well done, everybody, for trying to do that. But at the same time, all you have to do is you see something like the Ukraine war, and you can see how Russia, everyone is going, or particularly, remember, cast your mind back to the first 6 months. It was a case of, oh, Russia, we're going to stop working with you, but you've got all the oil and gas. We need oil and gas. Oh, well, maybe we shouldn't. Let's cast it to one side. Well, okay, well done on doing that, but now all that's happened is oil and gas prices have gone up because we still haven't transitioned away from that. It's when we're at 90% electric, that's when oil and gas, you know, China or Saudi Arabia can do whatever they want, and it won't change the price because nobody's really using it like they used to. But that's going to take years, if not decades. I would like that to happen. It is a little easier said than done. Let's move on. But when you've got something as important like that and you've got people fighting in the desert over it, you've got the locals, the Fremen. You might as well just call them the Arabs in the Arabian Peninsula, because that's what happened to them. And during the First World War, what's fascinating about that is Britain gets a lot of flack about, you know, colonialism and blah, 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 which is true, okay? But at the same time, they weren't dumb enough to just sort of turn around and say, ah, white people are best, so white people are going to do all the fighting, we'll just kill everybody of colour. They were far smarter than that. And particularly in Arabia, there was this group of peoples who wanted to overthrow the Ottomans. It's forgotten that the Ottoman Empire was, yes, very Muslim, but it wasn't Arab. Turks are ethnically different to Arabs, but more importantly, Ottoman Turks hadn't been Turkish for the best part of 600 years. Every single sultan, their mother was a slave girl, a Christian white slave girl. So if you go down 20 generations, you're going to discover that nobody is particularly Turkish anymore. And therefore, the fact that they had a different flavor of Islam, and also they were ethnically different, and also they'd been ruled by overlords, imperial overlords, for literally centuries. When you get another empire appearing in the region going, we'll give you everything you need, we'll give you guns, we'll give you tactics, we're going to attack your enemy over here, you attack them over there. And you know what? We don't want anything. We're not going to take you over afterwards, which is actually true. Britain did not just conquer everything that they fought in. And so, really, the campaign in the Middle East of World War I is quite similar to what's going on Arrakis in the 30,000s AD. And therefore, it's just another example of how clever these movies truly are. You've got that element there, and you've got this sort of demand. You've got the Harkonnens and the Atreides and the Emperor as well, played by Christopher Walken. That was my... I tried to do Walken. I failed. But he does have that beautifully distinct voice. However, you've got this idea of an emperor. Why did the emperor take away the Harkonnens' power of Arrakis and pass it over to the Atreides? Because the emperor, like emperors or kings in the past, recognized that you only have power as long as you've got more people loyal and more strength than any other group. And when it boiled down to it, if might is right and somebody's mightier than you, you might get squished. This is the essence of Game of Thrones as well. The Lannisters and the Starks and so on and so forth. And so they do a good job of how the Harkonnens are now so powerful that you might want to take them down a peg or two. But that's not to say that the Emperor's on the side of House Atreides, or indeed, if he's seen as being too aggressive towards the Harkonnens, he might end up provoking a civil war that he might not win. And the thing about these eras of emperors and kings is, if the people did rise up, it usually ended up with your head being removed and stuck on a pike. So if you're going to play the Game of Thrones, you either win or die, to quote George R. R. Martin. And you know what? He's absolutely right about that one. So what we've got then is something that, in the one hand, has influenced decades of science fiction, be it books or TV or cinema, but also it's harking back to, from the perspective of when Frank Herbert was writing it 50 years earlier, World War I, and fighting over what would eventually become some of the richest deposits of oil in the world. And then also, you've got references back to the medieval. This, if you like, is what makes it special. Is there anything truly original in the world of sci-fi? Now, I did do the War of the Worlds episode, and I pointed out how the idea of microbiology was completely new then, to the idea of this all this technology being overthrown by simple bacteria in the water. That was kind of clever. But the idea that the super advanced society that's just conquering things, as I said at the time, that was making a reference to what was happening in Tasmania and in other colonies as well at that time. The might is right ethos put into humanity and the British Empire against something even bigger and mightier than it. And it's the same thing here. There is some political discussion about it. But what's interesting is this idea of Child of Destiny. And this is one of the cleverest things about the Dune book, movies, etc. Because all too often, and I've again read a few articles saying, can we please stop having Children of Destiny? It's worked very well in the past. Let's take Harry Potter, for example. And one of the great things about Lord of the Rings is nobody is a person of destiny. Frodo, which it all hangs off, he is not the chosen one. He happened to have been chosen, and that was largely by accident. But there are so many. Think about video games. One comedian said the biggest cause of death in video games is if you happen to be the parent of the chosen one. Because to start the journey of the chosen one, daddy and mummy's gotta die. So yeah, it happens in so many things. Luke Skywalker is another Child of Destiny.
But why would Imperial troops want to slaughter Jawas? If they traced the robots here, they may have learned who they sold them to, and that would lead them back home.
Oh, wait, Luke!
And we all get a bit sick of it, but what's here, and what is so clever and so mature, is it's outright shown that it's been manipulated. The prophecies have been altered to fit Paul, and Paul knows that he isn't the Messiah. He's not the Messiah, he's a very naughty boy. No, what he is, he knows it's propaganda, but he also knows that he can genuinely help. And that's the important thing. He knows that he can make a difference. He spoiler, obviously his dad does die in Dune Part 1 in a really famous bit, which is in the book and also in the David Lynch movie as well, where he is lying there and he's given a chance to breathe the gas out on Baron Harkonnen and it doesn't quite work, but just brilliant, brilliant. But again, a really unusual way to try and assassinate somebody with gas rather than with a poison dagger or something. And so, yes, Paul understands that he can use the prophecy to his advantage. And the people around him keep telling him, you are, in essence, the chosen one. But he doesn't really believe it. And he knows the artificiality behind it. It's just a really clever way of showing how people will play into the propaganda and things like that. So I will say that whereas Star Wars is classically, it's a lot of people have said it's more a space opera. It's an adventure story that happens to be set in space rather than necessarily hard sci-fi. But it does obviously clearly have sci-fi elements to it. But I'm going to say that Dune is one of the most intelligent sci-fis ever made that also has a level of spectacle to it as well. It gets you thinking in some ways just as much as the likes of Blade Runner, and yet it also, in terms of epic scale, can stand up there with the likes of Lord of the Rings or the biggest of biggest battles in Star Wars as well. As always, if this is your first time listening, thank you very much. Hello, I'm at Jem Deducci on both Twitter and Threads. Come and say hi. Thank you. Please give us a review. Please spread the word about us. Please don't forget to subscribe as well. All of this stuff helps. And when I say tell an actual person, I mean an actual real person in the office or a friend or a family member. If you enjoy this and you think that somebody else will enjoy it, actually reach out to that person. It all helps the podcast grow. Thank you. And as always, another episode coming soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories.
But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.